Please give a warm welcome to our speaker, Roger from the Happy Destiny Home Group.
Y'all really need a clock back there. Hi, everybody. I'm Roger Walker. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Roger.
David, happy anniversary, man. 4 years. That's a big deal. So grateful that you guys asked not only me to speak, but our group to speak this month. I think it's a very important thing, especially for my sobriety, to get out when I'm asked. Don't say no. If at all possible, don't say no. Get out, repay that debt, and to try to give back what was freely given to me. I guess my job here is like what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. The abridged version is I drank a lot because I liked it, and then I didn't. I found AA and worked some steps, and now I have a life that is happier than I could have ever imagined. That's it. And it is that simple. And I have tried to screw it up at every part along the way. My sobriety date is January 12th, 2015. I do have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor. We talk very often. And he is almost like a dad to me, I tell you. My sobriety date is the 12th because I was still, actually my last drink was on the 10th. 11th, I know for a fact I was still not sober. So when I came into the meetings, it was a Tuesday afternoon, walked into the brown bag when it was back down off Wilroy Road. And that's where I learned that people drink coffee and eat cookies at noon. They hug each other, they say hi. When I first walked in, didn't even think I was in the right place, man. Bunch of people laughing, guys hugging. I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm in the right place. But once I started hearing people sharing, I knew I was there. A little bit about myself. I grew up in a very small town outside of Charlottesville, Virginia. It's called Stannardsville. If you ever gone to the Skyline Drive, you probably blinked and drove right through it. Very, how you want to call it, modest town. Let's go with that. My graduating class was 99 people. And if Angie Woodson had passed English, we would have had 100. And still, that still messes with my OCD to this day. It's resentment. I've taken care of it, but it's still there. So we didn't make 100, but we were a small town. And with that small country town, is a bunch of small country boys who are looking for something to do for fun. And that was me. You know, you hear the story all the time. I didn't fit in. I didn't feel like I fit in. Man, I was a chameleon. I fit in with whoever I was with. I could listen to country music. I could listen to rock music. I had a punk phase for a while. I was just whoever I was with at the time. I melded to those people so I could drink with those people. And it was a lot of drinking. And we came up through high school, you know. Gosh, my first drink was, 13 years old. And that's, God. I still remember hanging over the sink of a party, you know, just dry heaving, you know, who starts off with Colt 45? I mean, really. But I did. And it's funny, even though I was that sick that first time of drinking, I can still remember the attention that I got from doing that, you know, and hanging over the sink and all the girls were coming, oh, I feel so sorry for you. I'm like, yeah. You know, and they're just, and I'm like, all right, okay, maybe this is okay. And it just continued like that. I was always looking for that release, you know, that release, the pressure being released from drinking and the attention. Because when I drank, I could talk to people better. I could act what I thought, act better. I was funnier. And like I said, I just fit in because I had the gift of gab, I guess, with whoever I was around. And that trend just continued pretty much throughout my whole life. I went through high school, never really got in trouble, but just drank. If there was a chance to go out with friends, I mean, we would always find some way to get alcohol. Like I said, small town, which means small grocery stores, and they don't care. Mm-hmm. As long as they're getting paid, they don't care. So we got beer. Lots of parties. Like I said, never really got in trouble. And grade suffered, of course. I mean, coming through high school, just horrible grades when I was getting ready to graduate. And it had more to do with the fact that I knew I wasn't going to college. I wanted no more part of school. And even community college or working out in the field, because there wasn't really that much around us to do. If you didn't want to bag groceries, it was kind of hard. You had to drive, what, half hour, 45 minutes to Charlottesville or Culpeper, whatever, to find a decent job. And yeah, I wasn't about that either. So here comes the U.S. Navy. My dad was in the Navy. He was still in reserves when I went in the Navy, and went in and talked about it. And like, I want to be a construction electrician. I'm like, because I want to learn how to wire houses. So when I get out of the Navy, you know, I can actually put something to use. So they're like, all right, we can do that. Sign on the line. So I signed, went in and, or thought I was going in as a construction electrician. So, because, well, we got to have a going away party, right?
Yeah.
So we have a going away party, and a certain gentleman shows up, and he starts trying to hit my girlfriend, and then Roger gets extremely angry, and I punch a wall and break my finger, and there goes that A school. So now I got to find another job. So I'm like, okay, well, how about I just go to the inside electrician? I'll be an electronics technician. I'm like, okay. So I actually made it to that one. We went down to, went through boot camp and everything. What was it, January through March in Great Lakes. Never saw grass the whole time I was there. And then what do? They shipped me to Florida for school. I mean, talk about night and day of temperatures. But I got down there, and it happened to be that this school that I was going through was a self-paced school. Self-paced schools and drunks don't mix. Because I was either hungover and sleeping at the desk, or just so anxious to get out there to get a drink again, that I just totally blew that course off, and the Navy and I came to a mutual agreement that I should no longer be an electronics technician. So what do? They give me a choice. They say, all right, we're not going to kick you out, but this is what we can do. You can be a boiler tech, which down in the engine room, 100 and some degrees, or you can be an operations specialist. I'm like, well, what does that do? And they're like, well, that's when you're up in like CIC, Combat Information Center, and you're a radar guy, and it's air conditioned. I'm like, sign me up. So they did. They sent me to Virginia Beach for Damn That Gay School, which was just, you know, one mistake after the other for where they sent me. And they put me down there, just a young kid in Virginia Beach, and the drinking continued. And it just continued all through my career, you know. But one thing I learned very quickly in the Navy is that knowledge can get you out of stuff. I don't care how much you drink and how much you mess up at night. If you come in the next morning and you do your job well and you learn your job, you don't have to go sweep the peepways. You get to stay in here and do stuff. And I took that with me. Oh, I learned that real quick. I was a quick learner that way. Not so quick with the alcohol part, but I learned how to get out of the dirty work very quickly. And we progressed on through my tours, one tour after another, you know, just bad decisions based on alcohol. My first ship was in Florida, and we went to Charleston, South Carolina, and there was a little shore duty in there. But then, you know, I was at another station, and then it turned time to go back to sea. And the station I was at, I saw what I considered the general decline of the ship. So I'm like, man, I don't want to go back to the ship. So they said, well, hey, how about the hovercraft? I'm like, hovercraft. All right, that sounds all right. So they sent me out to ACU-4, which we kindly called the ACU for the alcohol consumption unit, right out of Little Creek. And once again, decisions made about drinking. And I found my people out at ACU-4. You know, I knew I drank a lot until I got there. And I surrounded myself with people that I thought drank like me and acted like me. And I was very, very content for a long time. And I will bounce back a little bit. One cruise we were on, and this is very important in my story. One cruise we were on is in 95. I had just come off the mid-watch. I was kind of what they call watch soup up in combat. So kind of in charge of what's going on up there. And I'd just come off. I'd maybe hit my rack. It's like 7:30. And all of a sudden, my curtains get ripped open, and my senior chief's there. Said, the captain wants to see you. So there's only two reasons the captain wants to see you. You've messed up or somebody's dead. And when I rolled out of my rack and saw my senior chief's face, I knew it was the latter. Didn't know who. I thought it was a grandparent because they were getting on up there. So we go up to the captain's office and told me my younger brother had been killed in an accident. And that hit hard. He was no angel, but they were driving. The driver was drunk, and, well, Brian probably was too. But the story was they swerved to miss a deer. I'm like, okay, I know the whole how you swerve to miss a deer by running off the road when you're drunk. But, yeah, ran off the road, and, well, that was that. So I had to fly home for the funeral, and of course, it was tough. My parents were very messed up from losing their other son. And then that was it. And we did the service. And the very next thing I thought I could do was get a bunch of guys together and go celebrate the life of my brother. So we got a cooler full of beer and went down to the lake. And I got drunk and then drove home. That is alcoholism. I didn't care. My parents are at home crying because they just lost their son due to an alcohol-related accident. And I'm out drinking and driving after his funeral. I didn't care. I was home. I wasn't on deployment. I was happy to be home. And I was drinking and driving and thinking about no one but myself. That should have been hint number one. That I was an alcoholic, but it wasn't. What it did, though, was basically springboard my drinking into the deep end, because now I had an excuse. My brother died. Oh, I'm so sad. I'm so sad. I need to go drink. And that's what I did. I used his death for drinking and for getting out of things, and I've made my amends about that. Oh, my gosh, how I used that. And used it for quite a while, but then it also, that whole situation there also kind of took me away from God. I had been raised up in church, going to church and everything, until I got to about 14, and then, you know, it just became too much of a battle for my parents to put up with. So they're like, yeah, just stay home. But, you know, I still had some belief in God. And it was also at that funeral for my brother when the pastor came up to me and told me that it was God's will that my brother had been taken. That put a chip the size of a 4x4 on my shoulder for quite a while in relation to God. And I carried that with me all the way into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Still have problems with it sometimes, but it has gotten better. So anyway, now back. I'm still drunk, by the way. So we're back. I'm at ACU4 and just continuing to drink and continuing to drink. And back when I was in Charleston, I had met a wife, met a girl. She was at the College of Charleston, and she went to MUSC, Medical University of South Carolina. Well, we kept in touch, and we started dating and everything. And then while I was at ACU4, well, you got to graduate sometime. So she graduated and decided she wanted to move up with me. I'm like, all right, come on up. We'll get a place. And you know, when we started dating, it was about 5 or 6 years before she actually moved up. And there's a whole saying, she knew what she was getting into or whatever. Man, she had no clue. She really, I mean, this is a progressive disease. When she met me, it was moderately bad. By the time she moved up and I was at the unit out at Little Creek, it had gotten really bad. And she didn't have a clue. She stayed with me though. Still with me today. God bless that woman. I don't know why. But we met, got married in 2000 and 2003. My son was born. And then moved on through ACU4, and I get to the point where, you know, I just don't want to do this anymore. I was at 24 years in the Navy, and I'm like, enough's enough. And she kept asking me, she's like, well, what do you want to do? I'm like, well, I've got an HR degree, you know, I'll go into HR and everything. And so here I am, drop my papers, leave ACU4, and come to find out, no one wants to hire a person with no experience in HR. And I can tell you for a fact, even though I led departments of 50 some people and everything, it does not translate into the civilian world. And so I was at home by myself because the kids were in school and I had nothing to do but write resumes and drink. And the drinking got very, very bad. And it stayed that way for quite a while, being the stay-at-home dad. It was difficult because schools tend to not like you to have alcohol on your breath when you pick them up in the afternoon and go into the school to get them. So I was just white knuckling it basically during the day until I got the kids home, and then as long as they're in the house, they're safe. I can drink then until the wife gets home, and she's like, you know, just don't drink when I'm not there with the kids. I'm like, all right, I can do that. She would come in the door and there would already be a drink made on the counter waiting for her to break seal on that door. Come in. I mean, it got to a pretty bad spot. We had, what was the book say? Many sorrowful promises or whatever, you know, about I'll never drink again. And we did. I sat at the table crying. I'm like, I've got a problem. I don't know what to do and this and that. I cleaned out the liquor cabinet. I gave it to a friend, and you know, and all she wanted to keep around was a couple bottles of wine for her, because I mean, she drank occasionally, and she had this just funky mango rum that she liked to make mango mojitos, and that stayed out in the fridge. So I got rid of all my stuff that I like to drink, and holy heck, I tried a few times before to just stop drinking. Never really with the intention of quitting. I would just stop because I learned, my wife's in the medical field, and the field she's in, I learned to read labs. I've got arthritis, so I have to take blood work every so often and everything, and take levels and stuff. And I learned to read the numbers. And when that little bilirubin starts creeping up, I'm like, okay, ooh, I gotta back off a little bit. and I taper off the drinking for a while until the next level comes back down. I'm like, okay, we're good. Back off. You know, and in that cycle, you know, doctors like, how much do you drink? I'm a social drinker, which was at a 100% lie, because I hated going out with people. I hated people in general. I'd like to sit home in my recliner, highball, and just pretty much leave me alone. That's where I got that desolation, that isolation. I isolated myself from my family. I just wanted to sit in the recliner. I took care of them all day. Your turn. My turn. You know, I've got my cup. And, you know, I had hints that, you know, it had gotten bad and that I had a problem, because I've got this Tervis tumbler at home. It's a little bit bigger than that, the big one. And that's my cup that I drink everything out of. That. I drink rum and cokes, tea, water, everything goes out of that cup. So I go in the pantry one time. Oh, I'd stocked my liquor cabinet back up, by the way. It didn't work that time. So I'd stock the liquor cabinet up, and I go in there, and I make myself a drink, and come out, and the tumbler's pretty much full. And my wife says, you know, I'd like some iced tea. When did you get iced tea? I'm like, we don't have iced tea. She's like, so what's that? And I looked at it. Well, with a few cubes of ice in it, the cup full of bourbon kind of looked like iced tea. So, and I said, it's bourbon. No? And she looked at me like I had a freaking unicorn horn coming out of my head. The look on her face of disgust was just, like, yeah. But I didn't pour it out. I just sit right beside her in silence and drink it. You know, it wasn't enough to make me pour it out. Another way I knew I had a problem is I was just hammered one night doing my thing in a recliner. Everyone else had gone to bed because kids got put to bed. Wife was tired of trying to talk to me because I was just slurring. I couldn't talk or whatever. And I got up and stumbled across the floor. And in my mind, I remember this. My mind said, you do not need another drink. You're smashed, just go to bed. And I kept walking to the liquor cabinet, and I keep telling myself, you're drunk, you don't need another drink. And I kept walking to the liquor cabinet, I poured myself another drink, and went and sat down to drink it. I had zero control over alcohol, none. It, as the book says, it had become my master. I had nothing. So I did one of the tearful things again. There was quite a few of those. I can cry when I want to. So it may not look like, but I can cry when I want to. And so we had another one, and I said, you know what, I really do think that I have a problem, and I'm gonna stop. Once again, the words quit never came out of my mouth. I'm gonna stop. And I did. This time I did. For 2.5 months. And it was the most miserable 2.5 months of my life. Because I had no program. I had no program. I had no higher power. All the friends were gone. It was me fighting the obsession to drink every day. We played the game of get rid of the stuff in the liquor cabinet again. That went away. And it haunted me, because all I did was think about drinking. I wasn't sober. I was just a dry drunk. And then the last drink came when I was just making a simple pot of spaghetti, spaghetti sauce. We always put red wine in the spaghetti sauce, a little bit of red wine. So I'm making the spaghetti sauce. You know, she's not there. Kids are in there. So I get the red wine, a little bit in the spaghetti sauce. The next thing I know, I don't even know how it happened. You know, the story banging on the bar. How did it happen this time? So that bottle went down very quickly. The next bottle of red wine she had went down. And somehow that freaking fruity ass mango rum wound up gone too. Because I polished that off. And the next day, well, I passed out on the sofa. And the next day, it hits me. The book says, hit them when they're down. Hit them when they're shaking. Hit them when they're just, they can't take it anymore. And she called me from work. It was 10:05 in the morning. I'd been able to get up and get the kids to school, and then I went back to bed. It was 10:05 in the morning. She called me and said, I don't know what the heck happened last night, but your son asked if you were drunk again. That is what got me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. An 11-year-old boy, and I still to this day think my higher power spoke through him when he asked that question. It wasn't the question of, is dad drunk? Or was dad drunk? It was dad drunk again? He knew. There was no hiding. All these thoughts in my head of how I was hiding it from everybody, how I was sneaking out to the garage to take shots, all of that stuff, it just got blown. And it gave me the slimmest little light that, you know what, I might be hurting somebody other than myself. That was the 11th when I got that phone call. Like I said, still reeling from the night before. And the very next day, I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when she called me that day, she's like, you know what? I don't know much about this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I think you really need to go to a meeting. And the first honest thing out of my mouth was, I think I do too. So I did. I looked up the meetings. It was already past noon that day, so there was no new meetings. And in typical alcoholic fashion, I'm like, well, you know, maybe we'll try tomorrow. And I did, but I actually stuck to this one. And that's when I came down to the Magnolia Brown Bag down off Wilroy Road. I wasn't sure that I was going to go in when I was driving there. But as I drove past the meeting, Christy, God bless that woman. I still call her on my anniversary every year. Christy was standing on the stairs as I drove by. And when I drove by, we made eye contact. And we made eye contact. Now, I can't be a sucker and go turn around, because there was only one way in, one way out. If I turned around, I'd have to drive back by her. And she'd see me wimping out. So I'm like, all right. So I parked, you know, parked and went in. She hugged me. Guys hugged me. I don't know if you can tell. I'm not a very huggy guy. So, but it was something I learned in the program. Mama B down in Suffolk, God bless that woman. She taught me, and she told me, she's like, I am going to hug you until you accept it. And I'm like, okay. You know, thank you, Mama B. And she got just the greatest people, man, down there. But anyway, I learned, like I said, you can eat cookies and drink coffee at noon. I learned that other people thought like me. It had nothing to do with how they drank or the actions or consequences after they drank. It had to do with why we drank. And that's what I heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, my whole drinking career, it was all based, almost competition-based, you know, on, oh, I can drink more than you. Oh, you've only got one DUI? And, you know, it was all competition-based. But once we got to Alcoholics Anonymous, all that stuff just kind of floated away. And it was like, you know what? All we want you to do is be sober. and we're going to go through this book, and we're going to try to help you be a better person and learn why you drink. And that's what I learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. By coming to meetings, you know, just meeting, did the 90 and 90, and the whole time I just kept hearing my story over and over and over from women, from men, just, it didn't matter who was sharing, some piece of that related to me. And it's because we're all like-minded people. I mean, if you're in here, it's no accident that people come to an AA meeting. You don't slip and fall into an AA meeting. You know, either a judge thinks you need to be here, a spouse, a family member, maybe even you need to think you need to be here. But something got you to AA. And I am convinced it was my higher power that got me to AA. So I came in, you know, like I said, heard my story and everything, and then someone suggested, you know, you've been doing this a little while, maybe you should finally get that sponsor we've been talking about. So I did. I got the sponsor, and we started going through the steps, and, you know, I had step one lick, man. I knew the whole unmanageable thing, because I couldn't manage my life. I could run departments and take care of the house and everything, but, you know, managing my brain was just a totally different story. And it went through two, then three, then we got to four, you know, the dreaded step four, you know. And coming up through the military, I was a planner, you know. I planned everything. I had binders for everything. No little tabs and everything. We're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. And I took step four just like that. I got my binder. I got my highlighter. I got my pen. I got my paper, you know. And I thought about it for about 5 freaking months, and it about drove me crazy and almost drank again. Mm-hmm. And I thought about it far too long. Far too long. And I literally had to basically kick myself in the butt and just start writing. And someone gave me some worksheets, and I'm like, you know, whatever. I took a pen, I took a piece of paper, I did this column, then this column, then this column. And once I got those first couple of names, it flowed. It just flowed right through me. 13 pages later, I'm sitting there, I'm like, well, shoot, now I got to talk to somebody. And believe it or not, my sponsor says, well, I don't think I'm the guy for you to tell all this stuff to, so I'm going to recommend this guy. And then that's when I pretty much decided, okay, well, maybe then you shouldn't be my sponsor. So I did find the other guy, and we went through step five, and then very shortly after, I did find another sponsor. Because it has been my experience, and it is definitely my opinion. I hate that word in AA, but it is my opinion that if you don't trust your sponsor, or if he doesn't trust you enough to hear your fist up, then you need to find another sponsor. And that's what I did. I did find another sponsor. This guy doesn't blink. I mean, I tell him some stuff, and we talked about some stuff. Doesn't blink. All he does is share his experience. There is no, like, well, I think you should. There's none of that. I'll call him. I'll be all wrapped around the axle about something. And he's like, did you inventory it? Nope. Like, phone hangs up. And then I'm like, well, shoot, guess I know what to do. So I'll inventory it, call him, get it down on paper, read it off to him. And then he goes, well, I think you got that one right. Or sometimes it's like, oh, you screwed up again. All right, let's talk about this. And we work it out. So in the program, you know, the higher power, I have to talk about it because it's part of my story. I mentioned previously about the chip on my shoulder about God. And when I came into program, all I heard was God this, God that, God this. And then, you know, once I got into the book, we got to the part where it says, why don't you find a higher power of your understanding? And I'm like, all right, yep, I can get on board with that. And I was taught to pray. I didn't pray. I didn't know how to pray. It started off very, very simple. It said, I was told, when you wake up in the morning, say, please help me. I don't care what you're praying to, just say, please help me. When you go to bed at night, say, thank you. And then get up the next morning and do it again. Just do it again. And so I did that. I took the suggestions and things started working. It got better and it got easier. Life got easier because the more I prayed, the more, you know, I just found out that, you know, I'm not God. You know, I don't have to run everything. And it was amazing that just this relief. I was so exhausted while drinking from trying to control everybody and everything. It was so tiring. And turning things over to my higher power, it just let all that go. I found myself, I could finally sleep at night. I could never sleep like all through the night while I was actively drinking. But I came into the program, I could sleep at night. Now I'm freaking sciatical. Got me like a rotisserie chicken in bed. I can't sleep. But there are other issues. At least I'm sober. pain's a gift. Got me off track now. But anyway, I went through the steps, got all the way through the 12, and back in finding my higher power, it must have been as 4 months in, my daughter was in swim lessons or team or something, and it was out at the pool out on 58, the YMCA pool, Arrowhead, Camp Arrowhead, wherever that is. And we were driving out there, and we were just in the car, you know, going through downtown Suffolk 58, like into Emporia. You go past the McDonald's and Wendy's and all that, and if you go around this turn, there's this Victorian house that sits back off the corner and on that turn. And my daughter and I are just gut laughing. I mean, and I can't remember laughing like that for like a decade. You know, just honest laughing, not like, ha ha ha, you're so funny. None of that. We were laughing. And you call it burning bush, call it what you want. I felt a hand on my shoulder and something told me, it's gonna be okay, I've got this. And I went from laughing to crying like that. Totally messed my daughter up. She didn't know what had happened. So now we're laughing. Now I'm crying in the front seat. And she's like, Dad, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm okay, you know, through the tears. And from that point on, I have completely lost the obsession to drink. The obsession is gone. So we get up to, hey, I'm sober. It's 8:45, I'm sober. So, and I'm in the program. Man, we moved right along, didn't we? So I get through step 12 and everything's good. And then we're talking with sponsoring. It's like, well, when the heck are you going to start sponsoring other people? I'm like, aren't you supposed to tell me that? And so he did. He goes, start, you know. And it took a while. You know, I don't go out and actively promote myself as a sponsor. Would anybody like to be a sponsor? Yeah. You know, raise a hand at the end of the meeting. But what I found was when you start to actually do that 12th step, and go up and put your hand out and shake people's hands and start talking to people, meet them at the door, show them where the meeting is and everything, people kind of start to hear what you have to say. And, you know, if they ask, sure, I'll be your sponsor. And then we talk about things and go out. Some make it, some don't. So far, I've only had one that's made it. Thought I had one. It was like a year and a half. Then, poof, I call it the poof syndrome. You wake up one day and it's just poof, he's gone. But you can, when you've been in long enough, you can see it coming. Because the phone calls turn to text, and then the texts go away, and then the meetings drop off, and then poof, gone. So anyway, I tried to check up on them, but no answer. But working with other people is where it's at for me. Doing that 12-step, as my friend says, repaying the debt. Man, this program was given to me free of charge by a lot of people that helped me throughout this. My friend group down in Suffolk, oh my gosh. It's like, Suffolk is just like one big meeting. And it was the craziest thing, you know. I go Monday night over here, be a lot of people, and then I go Tuesday night. I'm like, oh, they must be following me. This is cool. They care about me. Oh no, man, they're just like meeting after meeting after meeting. They're just you see the same faces, man, like 5-6 days a week, and it's because they care. They care about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They care about the newcomer. Man, that's why we're here. The newcomer walking through the door. I can stay sober just reading the book and meeting with my sponsor. This is where it's at, you know, seeing the newcomer. That's why COVID hit. It was such a just mess. You couldn't see the person walk in. You couldn't smell them walking in. And that's why I was just absolutely excited as heck when we got back to face-to-face meetings. And working with other people, and I knew I was in the program, and I knew I was working the program, but when I heard another person's fifth step, that's when I knew I was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I swear to goodness, that helped me as much as it did him. Just making me feel a part of this wonderful program that gave me such a good life. So we've been to what happened, what I did, what it's like now. Back to the abridged version. Better than I could have ever imagined. My wife and I are probably at one of the best points in our 24-year marriage. I have a relationship. My kid, my one boy, go Dukes, he's going to be a senior at JMU this year. Don't know where his major of jazz studies is going to take him, but I know he's one of the best jazz drummers I've heard, and he's gigging all over the place. Charlottesville, Northern Virginia, Harrisonburg, he's all over the place, and making some decent money. So, you know, God's got a plan for him too. I actually have a very good relationship with my 17-year-old daughter. You don't really hear that much from dads, but from my experience of talking to other dads, but we do. We went to dinner last night, and sitting at the dinner table, once again, just gut laughing. She may look like her mom, but holy poor girl, she's got my sense of humor. And we can sit and just laugh and laugh. And life is truly good. And it's all because of the people in this room, my connection with my higher power, and this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life. I tell my wife every so often, like, you made that call on January 11th, and that saved my life. When you told me that, that saved my life. Because that gave me enough motivation, if you want to call it that, to get into these rooms. And here is where I was really saved. And thank you so much for asking me to speak tonight, David. Man, like I said, whenever I can, I will. I appreciate all of you being here, and that's all I got. Thank you.
Okay, our seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money collected at this meeting covers rent, supplies, and the rest is given to the Tidewater Intergroup District 24 and General Services Office. Okay, are there any AA-related announcements?
Oh. My name's Dave, and I'm an alcoholic.
Dave. Hello, David.
We have a speaker meeting on Fridays. You're at it right now. And next week, we got some great speakers lined up. I don't know how they're going to shake up against the Happy Destiny group, because it was really awesome this month. But next week, we have speakers from the Friends of Bill W. Group. And on the 5th, it's going to be Kenny H. sharing his experience, strength, and hope.
Nice.
And then there's three more, but I'll... keep you guys, biting your knuckles to find out who it is. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
Jake
Manal, I'm calling.
Jake.
The District 24 picnic is happening September 21st at Portsmouth City Park. It's going to start at 11, end at 2 at Shelter 3, the base of the shelters. We're going to have lots of food, and we're going to have some music. Games, trying to get a fake painter out there. So come, please join us. You can bring a dish if you like, but if you're not, there's going to be plenty of food. We're going to get a lot of hungers to participate. And, September 21st. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry. Anything else? Okay, besides speaking meetings on Fridays, we also have a big book study on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock. I've asked a friend to present the chips.
Am I doing all the chips? All right. I'll do them.
Do all of them. Be a friend, Jake. Be a friend.
Jake McDonald, alcoholic.
Hello, Jake.
Roger, thank you for sharing your story. That was right on, man. Got to hear the struggles and then the solution and what your life's like now, and it's a beautiful thing. So appreciate it. Jazz drummer, he's gonna go far. That I listen to Jay Sennett a lot, and so that's pretty cool. All right, chips. So we got this white chip, and this is for anybody that heard something tonight that may try to stop drinking for just 24 hours. Anybody want to try 24 hours today? Starting right now. All right. Put that there. We have the orange chip for 30 days. Anybody have 30 days? Orange, you glad you made it 30 days? All right. That's the only one I'm doing. All right. Burgundy chip for 60 days. Anybody got 60 days continuous sobriety? Red chip for 90 days. Anybody have 90 days continuous sobriety?
Does that count weekends and holidays?
Yes. Yeah. Looks like you don't get one. Blue chip is for 6 months. We have 6 months. All right. We have a green chip for 9 months.
Green bro.
All right. We have a yellow chip. This is for 1 year or more from another home group. All right. And tonight, we have a birthday that we're celebrating. We have balloons. We have some cake. This is for David M. And he came to us from...
Florida.
He's in the Coast Guard. He was in Florida. He was in Baltimore. And now he's here. And I remember when I first saw him, I was like, oh, who's this guy? You know, we gotta get this guy in full. He joined our home group, and he asked me to sponsor him, and he's been one of the greatest teachers for me. And one of the things that I've been learning sponsoring David is that you got to pay attention to what's going on in other people's lives, right? Because if you don't, you could miss some very, very important things. Because I don't know about you, but I think I'm always so busy, right? And so there's all these things that are going on in my life. And if I don't make sure that I'm putting enough effort into other people's lives, then I'm going to miss some things that are going on. So David has taught me a great deal of that. He's also taught me that I'm not the only one that goes and ebbs and flows of commitment to this. And thank you, David, for showing to me that that my experience is going to help other people who also go through those same experiences. But David has been a very strong contributing member to our home group here, and so we're happy to celebrate his fourth year. Come on, get your mic down.
Yep, my name's David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, David.
Yeah, I came to this home group last year, June, just after my 3 year, and it was my second move in sobriety, so I knew what not to do. My first move, I didn't get a home group right away. I didn't get a sponsor right away. We went out to sea, and the first time I came back, I wanted to drink so bad. I ended up making a call and not picking up a drink. So yeah, I got here and did that. And when I came here, I think the first meeting I went to, there was, I think it was a retired Air Force dude sharing his story. The tables were set up in like diagonal ways. We've moved up from now to these vertical style. But I took a liking. As soon as I came in this room, you know, they shook my hand and it just seemed like they were doing the deal. And it was exactly what I needed because I wasn't working the strongest program in Florida. And I'm glad that I got stationed here and met these guys because they really do the deal and they showed me a great lot because I don't think I would have lasted, you know, I wouldn't call it a half measure, it's maybe like a 70% measure, it would have been like 50, but it wasn't going to last. So yeah, how'd I do it? I started to actually take suggestions, you know, I started to realize that my way of thinking wasn't going to work. Even when I was going through the steps, I thought it wasn't going to work for me. I would have told you alcohol wasn't my problem, but I identified in, I tried to listen for the similarities. And then when I started to take suggestions from my sponsor and realized that, you know, whatever's going on into my ears is what got me here, things started to change. And I also started working those steps. That was the most important. So yeah, I'm going through the steps again with my sponsor now. And the ebb and flow is real. That's why I was laughing because, you know, I'm still reluctant at 4 years, you know. But as long as I don't pick up a drink and continue to do the best I can and stay close to a home group, keep a service position and do that, you know, then things are going to be fine. But if I pull away, man, you know, even at any length of sobriety, I could get treacherous. So thank you guys for my sobriety. Appreciate it.
David, thank you. Anybody else want one last chance at picking up a 24-hour chip for today? All right. Thanks for the chip.
Thank you for tripping.
Thanks, Jake.
We at the Interaction Group believe that one of the important keys to long-term contented sobriety is effective sponsorship. If anyone here tonight needs a sponsor, please see me after the meeting and we'll make sure that you have one tonight. Interaction is a home group. If anyone is looking for a group to join, we welcome you here. And for those of you who will, please join me in saying the Lord's Prayer, and after we will have cake.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep coming back, it works when you're in. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear David. Happy birthday to you.
No, it was an awesome talk. Yeah, it was the dig. He was legit. Yeah, thanks, man. September 10th.
September? It's next month.
I know.
Wait, what's 3 weeks?
Oh, what?
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, it's July as well.
Okay.
My buddy Steve, yeah, that's why I was like, that's why I sent an email. I was like, it's
I'm like, you just fucked your ass.
Okay.
I heard about the story and made me want to drink.
It was right here.
Oh,
right
was sitting. Oh, was it? Okay, yeah, you got it.
You sure?
Screwed up.
What's the serial number on this? Actually, you got it.
God knows.
Yeah. God can do it.
I have my $3.
Funny, good thing I didn't lose $1, dude.
I promise.
Yeah, guys.
I've never done anything, you know, like this.
You know, I mean, that's what I did, man. I've been enlightened every time.
There was a kid where you called you tonight.
Who?
I'm dead serious.
Carmel?
Yeah, there's
Carmel.
But it might have been certain types. Where's the strange at? I'm being serious. I wouldn't mess around.
I
know, I
appreciate you.
It was like
my man!
You got your new job yet?
Yeah,
we're watching the
You got my number.
Jump.
You got my number.